Hey guys, Bill here. I have a big favor to ask of you, and I promise it won't take up too much of your time. You know my show is supported by some fantastic sponsors. They help the show happen. Well, we'd love to hear your feedback about those sponsors. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it. I swear, nothing more than that. Again, that's podcastlisteners.com. Now here's the show. Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Monday, November 19th, 2018, week 11 of the NFL season, almost in the books. Of course, tonight we have a rather important game coming on Monday Night Football here at ESPN. The Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Rams. We'll talk a little bit about that game as we get on during the show today, but I'm going to start, I think, today by talking about the Saints and their performance yesterday. Maybe get to some discussion about the top teams in the NFL, and if there is a great team amongst them, or a great team, we'll get to it. Maybe I'm teasing it a little too much, but joining me to have that discussion, talk about week 11, talk about the NFL, a frequent contributor to this show, widely beloved, I would say, by the listeners to this show. It is ESPN's Mike Sando. Mike, how are you?
The introduction like that, I'll be back tomorrow if you want. I mean, this is great. No, I love coming on, Bill, so appreciate that welcome.
It's my pleasure. It's an easy show whenever you are on, Mike. That's what I always say. It's always a breeze because you do all the hard work and I just get to listen and look smart. But we have a really fascinating top of the league right now. And I was thinking about doing this for a column. And then we were talking about what we were going to discuss on the show today. And those two sort of melded together. And we can start with the Saints, who blew out the Eagles yesterday in a dominant performance. But in terms of the top of the NFL, in terms of the teams who you would say are the Super Bowl contenders at this point of the season, is there any team you think is really great on both offense and defense?
That's a good question. Well, no, I don't think so. You know, the numbers say that the Bears are good on offense and defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about them a little bit. And before we started taping, I was telling you that I had gone through this thing looking at Mitch Trubisky with all the other quarterbacks in the league and trying to find, you know, how many teams would trade their quarterback for him. You know, I don't think it's as big of a number as you'd think for a guy who's whatever he is, third in the league in QBR. So are they a great offense? I don't think so. I think they're doing a great job on offense. But I think as I look at it, like right now on my screen, I'm stacking all of the 416 teams since 2006. That's as far back as our really advanced metrics go. Mm-hmm. And when you stack them all by total efficiency, you can see like the second best team would be the 2018 Chiefs, but they're well below average on defense.
Right.
You know, you can see the Bears from this season, they're well below average on special teams, and I think we have our own opinions of what they are on offense. Mm-hmm. The Rams are a little below average on defense. So I think from a, you know, from a talent standpoint, it could be the Rams are the team. But I don't think they've played up to that level on defense. And the Saints, despite the commentators yesterday driving me crazy by saying Drew Brees has never had a defense like this, he has. I mean, their defense is not statistically good. So I don't see a complete team.
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with the Saints, where I think they looked great on defense yesterday against Carson Wentz, and that Eagles offense, and you know, really seemed to just give them fits in terms of the pass rush, in terms of the offensive line. Of course, losing Jason Kelce during the game didn't help matters, but I mean, they really seemed to lock down an Eagles offense that at its best this year has been pretty good. Not necessarily the offense we saw from a year ago, but Carson Wentz has had some pretty impressive numbers. I wonder with the Saints. And I wonder how much of what's keeping them down in the rankings. They were 27th in DVOA heading into this week. Mm-hmm. How much of it is really that ugly three-game stretch to start the season where the Saints allowed 48 points, excuse me, in the week one loss to the Buccaneers, which seems like it's going to be probably one of the weirdest outcomes of the 2018 season when we think about what's happened to those two teams since then. Allowed 18 points to the Browns, but in a game where they needed a stop on fourth down, couldn't get it, and then had to have a missed extra point, and then a Brees drive sort of saved them, and then 37 points to the Falcons in that week three overtime victory. But since then, outside of the Rams game, and the Rams are going to score on pretty much everybody, it's been 23 points or less against some decent offenses. So
Yep.
I mean, I wonder if, to me at least, if they're sort of rounding into form where they have that secondary figured out now, with Marshon Lattimore playing at a much higher level than he did during the first few weeks of the year. And if the Saints are going to be a team where maybe, you know, if they can keep this up, and obviously they've been so good on offense the past 3 weeks that they don't need a great defense, but if they can be, you know, maybe a defense in that 10, 12, 14 range over the remainder of the season.
And while you were saying that, I recalculated. I said, hey, let's eliminate those first three games. Because remember last year they had issues out of the gates, right? First couple games, they were terrible, and that sort of was the anchor around their stats for a while. So if we do remove the first three games, which I think is fair to do, it's not like we're picking three other games spread throughout the season to make it look good. We're just saying, hey, are they better since then? In our 0 to 100 efficiency ratings, they would go from 32nd percentile, which is terrible, to about 48. So that's fine. You know, and I think we also have to take into account that offense is exploding. You know, so maybe we need to have a different standard for what good defense is. You know, we're used to saying good defenses are, you know, holding everybody down like, you know, Seattle did a few years ago or Baltimore has at certain times. There aren't a lot of teams really doing that right now. So maybe just not being terrible on defense is fine. And I think it sort of has been for Drew Brees. I mean, we've had that conversation before. If you go through and don't even use advanced metrics and just say, hey, let's divide Drew Brees' career 2006 to present into two buckets. Right. Let's divide it into the bucket when his team allows, like, it's something like 23 points a game or under. Well, they win like 13 games a year when he does that. You know, I mean, they're 11, right. 12, 13 games. And then the other games are 24 or more points allowed per game, and he still keeps them at 7-9. So, to me, they're as good as they've ever been on offense, and statistically that holds up. And if they are just sort of closer to average on defense, which is what they've been since week four, then I think you can say elite team. You know, you can then stack them in that group, and I feel like they're trending that way. They're going to probably have playoff games at home, which certainly helps them.
For sure.
They've kind of been my Super Bowl pick the last couple of weeks just based on how that's all trending. I think beating the Rams for them was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not as if I don't think they're going to have to play in a really cold stadium. Like, it seems like the NFC Championship game. I mean, that's not right. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh. Maybe I'm being a little too aggressive, but it seems like it's going to come down to either the Saints or the Rams as having the top seed in the NFC. So you'd figure, you know, their path to the postseason is either going to be at home, which would be great, or through Los Angeles, which is not necessarily the end of the world in terms of, you know, having that sort of cold, blustery stadium where Brees might struggle like the Seahawks game a few years ago, perhaps. All right, we'll get back to the rest of the league's possible elite teams here in a second. First, want to talk about Stamps.com. Now, we've talked about this before on the show. I'm very lazy. I don't like going out of the house. I have an apartment. It's not very big, but I like it. It's cozy. It's comfortable. I don't have to put real pants on to go outside. And what I really want to do is not spend a ton of time at the post office. It's a lot of work. It's far distance away. It's a long line. Not interested. What I want is postage on demand, and I want to be able to ship things quickly and affordably. And very fortunately, there's Stamps.com, which exists and lets me access all the services of the post office right from my desk. You don't need a desk. That's not part of using Stamps.com, but I've used it from my desk, from my laptop, on my couch, even shipped things from bed before. That's right. I'm pretty lazy. I'm just checking out the laptop on bed. I want to ship something. I go to Stamps.com. You know the holidays are coming up. You're not going to want to go to the post office with dozens of boxes in your hands as you're shipping stuff to your family and your loved ones. Well, you don't have to. You can just go to Stamps.com, buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And right now, there's a special offer if you use promo code Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. And I know you're asking me, what's in that special offer? Well, I'm going to tell you. Just be patient. It's a 4-week trial and includes postage and a digital scale. That's great. Just do it for the digital scale alone, and then you get that extra postage. It's a great deal. So check it out. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, don't look somewhere else. Don't say hi to your loved one. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, that's stamps.com. Enter in promo code Barnwell. Now back to the show. The team that I saw that ranks in the top 10, or at least ranked in the top 10 in DVOA in both offense and defense heading into this week, the only team that managed to do it were the Chicago Bears, who you brought up earlier, mm-hmm. who I believe are number one on defense, which no surprise, they are great on defense, but 10th in the league in offensive DVOA. And I mean, yep. I certainly have heard from Mitch Trubisky backers with the Bears, with writing about the Bears in recent weeks. I think we saw a quarterback yesterday where, you know, the numbers were pretty good, but I also think it's fair to say that he was not especially consistent and made more mistakes than you would have hoped for in a game where it really seemed like the Bears just basically had to avoid turning the ball over and they would have comfortably beaten the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes, I was actually on the phone with a coach from another team for part of the first half, and he was just like, I wish that I could recreate the whole conversation in my head, but he was just like pointing out on every play all the bells and whistles, and we, right. you know, you would derisively call gimmickry, but I would call it good coaching. You know, I think it's good mm-hmm. coaching for Matt Nagy to not act like he has something different than what he has at quarterback, you know, and I think they are a great example of what good coaching can do. You know, they would be the They would lose that game. That's an easy win for the Vikings last year if it's the same Bears offense they've been trying to run for right. the previous 3 years. I think it'd be no problem. People ask, what's wrong with the Vikings? Well, the Bears are wrong with them because you know, they're a tougher team to beat now, and I give them a ton of credit for that. So I think they have played well offensively. Now, you know, coming into this last week, they had played a league-high five games against teams that had losing records going into the game, and they were 5-0 in those games, and they had right. beaten one team that had a winning record at kickoff. It was the Bucks, you know, who aren't a good team. So that said, you can only control the team you're playing that week, and they've done a good job against those teams, including the Vikings, who are, you know, are a better team. So I give them a lot of credit. I think I didn't think they'd be 7-3. I didn't think even 3 weeks ago necessarily that they would make it to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I'm still skeptical on them, but you have to give them credit for what they're doing.
Oh, for sure.
Whether or not you think that, you know, you can talk about sustainability or what they're actually doing on offense. You know, I think Minnesota can actually feel pretty good about how they played defense last night.
Yeah. I thought actually, I mentioned the numbers were good. The numbers were good in the first half. I should clarify, after the second half, in the second half, he was not very effective, Trubisky, in terms of being a runner or a passer, finished with a 61.9 passer rating. In the game, you mentioned the Bears and how they played some mediocre teams. They've got a lot of games where they played either a backup quarterback for a chunk of it or for the entirety of the game. I mean, the Packers in week one, of course, they knocked out Aaron Rodgers for part of the game, played DeShone Kizer. Week three against the Cardinals, they knocked out Sam Bradford, who was benched, has not been back since, has been cut afterwards, and got to see that they moved Josh Rosen. Week four, they blew out the Bucks. They got Jameis Winston for the second half of that game. Week six against the Dolphins, they played Brock Osweiler in that contest and lost. Week nine against the Bills, I believe, was the Nathan Peterman game. Yes, it was. Nathan Peterman threw 49 passes in that game. So, I mean, they've played a lot of contests against either backup quarterbacks for a chunk of it or backups for the entirety of the game. And, I mean, that's nice. And but it's partly been because they've been really good on defense, but you know, you're not going to see that most likely in the postseason. You might get lucky and get a backup right. for a game or two, but most likely you're going to be playing against top level quarterbacks. And they've been, you know, they gave up 38 points to the Patriots, and I can't really fault them for that. They blew the game against Rodgers, but they did do a pretty good job against Russell Wilson in week two. They held Matthew Stafford to a mediocre performance in week 10. So, I mean, the defense is legitimate. And I just think, you yep. know, with Trubisky, it's not that he has to be a great quarterback right now. I think he just has to be, he has to basically stay out of the way. I mean, if he is great, that's awesome. And it's an added advantage, and they could be a Super Bowl contender if they get great play out of their quarterback. But I think at this point, this is a team that's going to be more about what they do on the defensive side of the ball and how they are running the football and making plays after the catch than they are about Trubisky sort of, you know, leading them into, big plays.
And if you're, you know, been following the Bears, let's just be happy that they're 7-3. I don't care if all the teams forfeit that they won. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's just we're having a conversation of what kind of playoff team are they? Are they legitimate or not? Well, that's a huge step of progress. You know, they're a much tougher team than they've been in the past. And I think, they're going to have four of their final six on the road. They're going to lose a couple of these games, but there's also teams on there they can beat. I mean, they're going to see the 49ers. They're going to see the Giants, even the Lions this week. So I think they're going to get to, they're going to be over 500. They're going to play a playoff game and take their chances. I mean, we'll see. I don't think everyone's just shining up to play them, but if they do get in a situation where, they have to pass the ball, I think it'll get away from them quick.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. In terms of other teams might be considered for this category, you might look at the Rams, of course. You mentioned 9-1. They're probably the best candidate. I have to admit, though, I mean, I thought we were going to see more out of the defense of Wade Phillips. And you figure it's going to take some time. They integrated a lot of new talent. They lost Aqib Talib, and that has hurt them. But this is a defense that is the fourth worst run defense in the league by DVOA. They are 20th in defensive DVOA heading into the week. I mean, do you think they sort of figure this out sort of in a similar way to what the Saints did? And if they get healthy, or if they just get a ton of production out of Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, do you think this is a team that sort of just eventually, becomes a team that's dominant on both sides of the ball in a way that really they were, to be honest, last year?
I think they have their fingers crossed, hoping it can happen. I don't think I would bet on it happening. I think getting Talib back late in the year could be good. I question the fit of Marcus Peters in the Wade Phillips scheme. I mean, I think he's a little bit better off the ball and letting his instincts come to the forefront instead of just matching up and playing man coverage. I think we've seen that. I don't think it's just a matter of him being lingering injury from the calf. I think they're not getting as much out of him. And when you add some of the players they've added, you wonder is Ndamukong Suh or these guys, are they just self-starters that are going to absolutely play up to their potential all the time? I think if people in the league thought that's what they were, they might still be on their teams, right? So they were a collection of talented guys who were available for different reasons. And I think the fact that they're going to keep winning and gives them a chance to keep it together and avoid the downside that people worried about, which was, finger pointing and things coming unraveling. Look, they're just going to be good enough to win and avoid that type of a thing. But it doesn't mean that they're going to be getting absolute peak premium performance out of Dante Fowler and Ndamukong Suh, Marcus Peters every week. And I don't think it's necessarily realistic to expect that. And remember, you've got a team where, you've got a defensive coordinator, it's kind of a player's coach. You've got an offensive coach, head coach who isn't even really watching the game when their defense is out there. It's not like he's driving that side of the ball. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a question mark with good potential on any given week, but don't know if we can just count on it week to week.
Yeah, and I mean, this could be a week where we do see it play up, because I think about this Rams-Chiefs matchup, and we'll get back to the sort of elite teams to talk about the Chiefs in a moment, but in terms of this matchup for the Rams, I mean, the thing that stands out to me, the thing that just seems like the obvious weak point in the Chiefs lineup on the offensive side of the ball is the interior of their offensive line, where even though Kareem Irving has played well this year, they're going to be down Mitch Morris at center, who has a concussion. They're going to be down Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who was on the injured reserve at right guard. And the Chiefs are lining up Austin Reiter and Andrew Wiley, who I mentioned this on SVP earlier this week. I am a professional football writer. I have to admit, I had not heard of these players until this season. So doesn't mean that they're bad, but obviously they are inexperienced. It's fair to say. And they're up against Aaron Donald and the Ndamukong Suh in this matchup. It just seems like if the Rams do end up winning this game tonight, that is sort of the point where the house of cards could come down if you're the Chiefs on offense.
Yep. No, I agree with you. I think it's important for them to have Andy Reid have a great schemer. Obviously he's going to know where they're vulnerable and scheme accordingly. So you have guys who can stress the defense sideline to sideline, obviously down the field. I think you've got to find ways to, you've got an athletic quarterback, move them away from where you think the pressure is going to be. Don't be stubborn running a scheme-based protection plan that can be easily exploited. You've got to be very matchup conscious in this game. Teams have had some success against them running the ball, I think that has to be a component of this as well, not just because Kareem Hunt's on my fantasy team and I could use a good game for him tonight. But I think, you know, just being smart about this, I think we can count on that from Andy Reid. So I'm watching those matchups, but I'm going to be a little bit surprised if it just totally wrecks the game for Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. In terms of how these two teams approach this game on offense, I mean, if you're the Chiefs, what do you think your game plan is? And if you're the Rams, what do you think your game plan is?
Well, it feels like a game to me that it's going to be the first team to 35 points, you know,
yeah.
has a chance to do it. If I'm going after the Rams defense and I know Marcus Peters inside and out, I'm going at that matchup all the time. You know, I'm trying to get the psychological advantage. I'm knowing his strengths and weaknesses. I'm knowing his tendencies. I'm knowing the matchups. And I'm making him not have a fun game, you know, from the start. If I'm flipping around the other side, I just want to wear out that Chiefs defense with Todd Gurley. You know, it's in the screen game, it's in the running game. I mean, to me, he's your strength. You've lost Cooper Kupp. He's the MVP of your team. See if you can just if you can get him going as normal, then everything else opens up. I think they'll really have a good chance to pass the ball down the field. I think it will be a fast-paced game, kind of like maybe kind of like the Minnesota Ram game, where or even like the New England Kansas City game. And you got to admit that both of these young quarterbacks did pretty well in those situations. You know, I think those are tough situations for any quarterback, but especially young quarterbacks. So I don't think that there's a lot of surprise schemes. You're not going to see Wade Phillips do something exotic necessarily, right? I don't think Bob Sutton's known for something exotic on defense. I mean, I think those guys are just going to be holding on.
Holding on for dear life. I think that's a fair way to put it. Yeah, I mean, I think the logical thing for the Rams to do in this game, if I were Sean McVay, and obviously he's a lot smarter than I am, but just if I was looking at the numbers and I was sitting there as the analytics person for the Rams and I was saying, well, what should we game plan for this game? This lines up for a monster game from Todd Gurley. The Chiefs have the worst run defense in football, 32nd in the NFL in DVOA heading into the week. They are a team that is particularly poor on defense when teams are throwing the football on throws to running backs. Sixth worst in the league by DVOA, a league high 74 yards per game allowed. They are not a great tackling team in the secondary.
Yep.
They are not a team that I would say holds up well against play action. Not a team that holds up well against screens. They're a team that if their best asset on defense is their pass rush. If they can get a pass rush on you, that is going to be a problem. But otherwise, they are going to be a mess behind that pass rush. And the added benefit of all this is if you have Todd Gurley and you're running the ball effectively and you're chewing up clock and you can go fast when you want to, but generally going pretty slow, you're going to keep Aaron Donald and the Dominican Sioux fresh and you're going to keep Patrick Mahomes on offense on the sidelines. So I could see the Chiefs sort of adopting the same strategy, but I think that the Rams on offense are just so well positioned to slow this game down and they could play fast. I think they could win a game playing fast, but I think they're better off playing slow and sort of trusting that they have the best offensive weapon in football and that he's going to sort of, be the sort of guiding path to them to victory.
Yeah, they sort of, if you look at it, for being such a good team, they've had a lot of games that are kind of close until they're not. You know, then at the end of the game, you've got the Green Bay game, both Seattle games, the Minnesota game, ended up being probably fairly close games at points in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And then they just sort of methodically are the better team over time. It's really, really impressive to watch.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It certainly seems like they have a way to pull those games out, and I think history says it's tough to keep that up week after week. But I think, you know, they're a team that they're going to be really good one way or another by the end of the game.
Do you have a clear favorite that you're picking in the game? Like, if you had to, you know, bet your prized possessions, are you just going with the home team and the smart play, or?
I think I would go Rams. If I had to pick a side with the spread, I think I would pick Rams -3. I wouldn't feel great about it, but I think that's the side I would prefer. I just think that the Chiefs defense is a bigger problem. And I think that, I do think that the offensive line for the Chiefs in the interior would give me pause against the absolute, perhaps only strength of the Rams defense. But I wouldn't feel great about it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you could absolutely talk me into picking the Chiefs if you were so inclined. Are you in the same place?
You know, I've been to a few Rams games recently, the Packer game. I think I was at both Seattle games, and mm-hmm. there was another one that I was in there as well. And just watching their defense, I felt like, man, Kansas City's going to really put up a lot of points on them. So mm-hmm. I don't know that I necessarily feel it strongly enough to just say I'm picking the Chiefs, but I've been leaning that way in the last month or so, and just feeling like I need to see more from that Ram defense. And this is sort of the ultimate test of it. You know, what type are they? Can their defense rise? Because, you know, when they played like in that Saint game, that got out of hand quick, you know, and I'm just a little bit worried about them defensively.
Yeah. So you would take Chiefs plus three as opposed to the Rams.
I think
-3.
I would. Yeah. If you're going to give me the points, I'll take the Chiefs.
Yes, that's not unfair. You might have talked me into it, actually, but I'll lean Rams. I just think that, you know, I think the home field helps. I think it's going to be an interesting sort of crowd. That the Rams crowd is not always the most aggressively Rams friendly, but I think there's so many tickets being given away to first responders, and it's sort of an interesting atmosphere that I think it could be a really fascinating matchup. Are you surprised that the NFL is going with the quote-unquote all-star crew of officials instead of sticking one crew in this game?
Yeah, I am.
That seems strange, huh?
It's a little odd to me. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting story. I'm not 100% sure what to make of it. It sort of just brings additional attention to the officiating going into the game, where I don't think anyone would be talking about what crew is doing it. We'd just treat it as another mm-hmm. game, and there'd be a bad call, and there'd be a good call and two bad calls, and that's a normal game, you know?
Yeah.
So, kind of interesting. I thought it was interesting that they moved the game. I mean, the dynamic of it is sort of fascinating to me, mm-hmm. the makeup of that crowd. I mean, it felt like at least a 50-50 Green Bay crowd there. I know they really travel. I think Kansas City, this is just so tough because a lot of the iHeart fans probably had tickets for Mexico, mm-hmm. and now you got to, on the last second, try to get to L.A. I don't know what type of crowd it's going to be. I think that's a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, the airlines were fortunately giving away flight changes, I believe, but of course you have to get a hotel. There's a different price point with Los Angeles as opposed to Mexico City. It'll be tough. It'll be a really interesting crowd. Before we go to break, though, one more question for you about the Chiefs. Of course, thinking about them as an elite team, I don't have to ask you about the offense. I know they're good. Do you think if the Chiefs, after the bye, manage to get Eric Berry back, do you think that would be enough to sort of flip their defense to being, a 10, 12, 14 level defense in the NFL?
I think it would get it to be, I think it could help them get to middle of the pack on defense, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would go 10 or 12 on defense, but I think in this era, especially when you're so good on offense, and it, look, they're elite team on special teams too, I don't think their defense has to be anything other than not terrible. And I think if it's not terrible, they're a contender like everyone else. And it's been terrible at certain points this season, but not so much lately. I know they haven't played the great teams, though. I mean, they've been playing Denver and Cleveland and Arizona, and you're going to look good against those teams. They did give up 40 to New England. So, you know, and they gave up, 37, I think, to the Steelers, maybe close to 30 to the Chargers. So they still have a lot to prove, but I think he would help. And I haven't felt like they're just spiraling out of control in the wrong direction. It feels like they've maybe gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. The Chiefs have to hope they're going to get Eric Berry back for the final 6 weeks of the season. We're going to come back here with the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment, but first, I want to talk about ZipRecruiter. We talk about ZipRecruiter a bunch on this show because ZipRecruiter is a very important part of the hiring process. You have a job with an opening. You should not go anywhere else. The first thing you should do is go to ZipRecruiter.com because going to other places, it's going to take too much time. You're going to have to click on so many different links, post your opportunity on so many different sites. It's not worth it. ZipRecruiter has automated that process. Why not let them do the hard work for you? Because ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. it finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identified people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you can get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., which comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just text Barnwell to 246810. That's Barnwell to 246810. Try ZipRecruiter for free today by texting Barnwell to 246810. Or if you don't like text messages, not out of the question, I got another solution for you. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell to hire the right person today. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions are posted at www.textrules.us. Message and data rates may apply. Now back to the show. All right, back here with ESPN's Mike Sando on the Bill Barnwell Show. I am, of course, Bill Barnwell. We are talking about some elite teams. And Mike, let's finish up that conversation here. Just in a list of teams I'm going to give you, teams that have winning records, teams that are likely going to make the playoffs, I want you to see if there's any one team that stands out to you as a team that you could figure, either by improving on offense or on defense, could be a team that is top 10, top 12 on both sides of the ball come January. So we have the Patriots at 7-3, the Steelers at 7-2-1, the Texans at 7-3, the Chargers, who lost yesterday but are still at 7-3, and that's it. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's any more teams that might fit in that discussion, but I don't think there are. So those four AFC teams, do any of them stand out to you as a team that might take a leap on one side of the ball over the remaining 7 weeks of the year?
Well, definitely the Chargers getting Bosa back. You know, I think he played and, you know, made somewhat of an impact in the last game. I felt like, you know, last year they were that type of team. I think they were top 10 on both sides of the ball, just going with our efficiency metrics, which are probably correlate pretty closely to DVOA. So they're kind of a team that I trust, you know, to be decent. The Patriots just seem to improve in second half of the seasons, but have enough question marks with the injuries that, you know, I'm not betting against it. I'm not going to ever say they're not going to, but I think it's a little bit more of a challenge. So, and, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, has, you know, certainly has that possibility. I mean, I think they've trended in the right way defensively, and they're not going to play Jacksonville every week. Ben's not going to throw three picks every week, you know, so I'm not going to overreact to that one game. I think they, of those teams, I would probably say the Chargers won. You know, the Steelers too, and then New England's just there because they always seem to be better in the second half of the year. I just don't necessarily understand how it always happens.
And the weird thing about the Patriots is now, this is going to sound hot takey, and I don't mean it that way. I don't mean it as like, you know, that they're a problem, but I think you know what I'm going to ask you is that you think about this team, and last year they were 31st in DVOA on defense. Their defense was genuinely bad. By any advanced metric, it was not good. This year they're 16th, which is, you know, not great, but it's certainly pretty good. I'm almost more concerned about the offense in some ways than the defense, because I don't have high hopes for the defense. If the defense is middle of the pack, that's great. That's all you need. You don't need to have a great defense if you have Tom Brady typically, but I'm not concerned about Tom Brady. I'm concerned about Rob Gronkowski, where he's missed three out of the last four games. He came back for a week and then went back on the shelf. Of course, they had a bye this week. You would figure he's going to be back for the Jets game this week. And they have, of course, games against the Steelers coming up, the Vikings coming up. So, I mean, there are, you know, there are reasonable concerns about when you want to bring Gronk back. And they're going to be fine. They're going to win the division. They're going to be in the playoffs. But this offense takes a step backwards when Gronk is out. They've taken a step backwards this year. In the past 5 years, I ran the numbers in my column this week. You know, Tom Brady, in terms of his numbers, goes from being Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees to being Matthew Stafford or Andy Dalton over the last 5 years with Gronk out of the lineup. And I think they can adjust. I think they have, you know, they have enough weapons at receiver when everyone's healthy that I think they can get by. But I don't know that the ceiling for this offense is as high without Rob Gronkowski. Yeah. And when that's the case, I think they need to rely more upon that defense being pretty good than they would with Gronk actually in the lineup.
Yep. So I think Julian Edelman's emergence and returning from the injury or the suspension, and you know he has to play great, because I've done that Gronk study too with him a couple years ago, and what I realized was that it used to be Gronk was the entire variable. Like if you took Gronk off the field, Brady plummeted. Mm-hmm. And then I realized after a while it was he needed to have either Gronk or Edelman. And so last year they lost at Miami to Jay Cutler when they didn't have Gronk, and I believe Edelman didn't play in the game either.
Yeah,
he was off the top of my head. So now the question is down the stretch, is Edelman and what else they have enough? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, because they've lost some of their most reliable players from the slot. I think we've seen, you know, veteran quarterback mishmash of receiver issues with Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and it can be a problem with Brady, too. I think he can have a breaking point. I think he's had those a couple times over the years. If you remember, you know, they played a playoff game, I believe, with, you know, Caldwell was their receiver, you know, their number one receiver. So I don't think they're to that point. To answer your question, I think I'm a little worried, but I still feel like over the last six games, it's not like Gronk is out for the whole season. I think there's a chance that he can still be there enough. And then if Edelman's playing well enough, you know, I think they can reset mm-hmm. and sort of do what they've always done. I don't know that they can do it at a high enough level to just pencil them in for the AFC Championship game, but I'm not betting against them at this time.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, and I don't know that this would fly, but if you were Bill Belichick and you look at your final 6 weeks, you're at the Jets, you're hosting the Vikings, you're at the Dolphins, you're at the Steelers, you're hosting the Bills, you're hosting the Jets, would you take Rob Gronkowski and say, we're going to play you in the Vikings game and in the Steelers game, and we're going to sit you for the other four games, and we're going to keep you as healthy as possible for the postseason? Do you think that at least crosses his mind in terms of Gronk usage?
Probably in like a, you know, that would be ideal, but I just think that he's so much more about projecting what the message is to the team, and right. that we're on to Cleveland, we're on to, you know, whatever the next game is. Right. I think that part of his mentality is so important to him, and that he wouldn't do it. But ideally, would you like to do that? You probably would. I'm just not sure that's how it fits into the overall mentality mm-hmm. of the coach and the team.
Yeah, makes sense. I think that's totally reasonable. So let's finish up today by talking about a division that has no elite teams. I think it's fair to say, especially after the leading team in the division, Washington, lost their star quarterback, Alex Smith, to a really ugly season-ending broken leg. They brought in Colt McCoy, lost to the Texans on Sunday. But at 6-4, they're still in first place, a game ahead of Dallas, two games ahead of Philadelphia, three games ahead of the Giants. I think we can rule the Giants out. I don't think they're going to make a run to the postseason. I guess it's not impossible that they could run the table and go 9-7. Let's rule them out for now. It seems like it's a three-team race. And of course, with Washington, I mean, do you think, either from what you've seen, from talking to people, do you think that they can survive at the top of this division with Colt McCoy in for Alex Smith?
I don't think so. You know, I don't think that they necessarily were going to anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt to me like they were doing a great job of just hanging around and not losing the games. And there was nothing really special about what was going on, but they were finding ways to, they were sort of playing, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if it's conservative football, but just there was nothing that stood out. Nothing was flashy. So
right, for sure.
I was curious with Colt McCoy coming in, you know, the state of the backup quarterback position is terrible. And I think, yeah. I think the state of the starting quarterback position has been better this year than it's been in the past.
Me too.
But the backup situation is horrendous. I would say for them though, if I could pick, you know, if you could pick five backups in the league, McCoy might be one of them for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always felt like he's probably not worse than some of the worst starters. So
sure.
If you look at his career as a starting quarterback, his QBR is 46.4. Okay. Which, I mean, if you're not 55 or higher, they're probably going to be looking to replace you over time.
Right.
But Alex Smith's a 48.7 this year. So they're the same. You know, just statistically, QBR-wise, impact on the game-wise, there's not a drop-off. Now, is McCoy going to play at that level for the rest of the year? I would say this. He's been in that offense for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is not a situation where you're bringing in a guy at the last minute as a panic situation, and suddenly he's trying to learn a new offense. He probably knows the offense as well or better than Alex Smith did, just having been there. So right. It's not like they've got to go 12 or 14 games with them. You know, maybe they can be 500 the rest of the way. I'd have to look at their schedule, but maybe they can be maybe they can just be close to 500 the rest of the way. What does that do for you? What does that do for you if you are in that division?
9-7? That's not bad. That might get you there. I mean, that'd probably get you there at 9-7. You'd figure.
It might get you there. Yeah, now, at the same time, so I was looking at this, our little ESPN FPI make the playoffs projections. Dallas was the biggest winner in the league from week 10 to week 11. They gained 20 percentage points. They went to 54% make the playoffs. And so as I just look at the rest of this division, make the playoffs after week 11, I believe that Washington is well down. Yeah, Washington's at, well, geez, Washington, they got Washington at 47%.
Wow.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, so basically a coin flip.
Yeah. Yep, and Dallas is at 55%. So I'm going to favor Dallas because, you know, I just think it's going to be harder. I think that beyond we don't just plug in Colt McCoy's starting QBR since 2010. You know, I think there's other adjustments that go on, and you'd probably rather have Alex Smith in there. That's why they traded for him. So it probably will show itself over the course of the season, and they probably won't be one of those teams at the end. I guess we need to look at, you know, what are the other teams in the NFC doing? Who are the other wild cards going to be if you're in the wild card position with a 9-7 record, 8-8 record? And I think a lot of that's going to be determined. You know, I mean, this week's a big one just with that Seattle Carolina game. It's going to tell us a lot about the division or the conference. So, you know, if the Redskins can go in, stranger things have happened. They can go in on a short week, all hands on deck, and win at Dallas in a Thanksgiving game. You know, if they do, what do the percentages say then?
Yeah, they're in much better shape if they win this week, of course. I mean, their next 2 weeks could be absolutely crucial. I mean, they have road games against Dallas and then on the mini bye on Monday Night Football against the Eagles. Those, if they win both those games, they're 8-4. I mean, they're in fantastic shape to make the postseason.
Yeah, it could happen because Dallas is flawed enough. You know, I suspect that short week you're traveling – It's a gut punch to lose Alex Smith, and then you've got a pretty good Dallas front and pass rush. Maybe they can get after Colt McCoy a little bit, force him into a mistake or two. Maybe Dak Prescott doesn't make a mistake, and you know the Cowboys are winning the game 20-16. That's probably the more likely scenario, but I don't think we rule it out.
Yeah, not hardly out of the question. I mean, none of these teams are great. You don't have to play, you know, at an incredibly high level over the next 6 weeks to win this division. You just have to, like you said, if you can go 3-3, and they have four road games, but it's, I mean, it's at Cowboys, at Eagles, hosting Giants, at Jags, at Titans, hosting Eagles in week 17. I mean, there's two games against the Eagles, so we know they can be good, but they have not been good in recent weeks. Cowboys, of course, a very inconsistent team. The Giants, we don't know what we're going to get out of the Giants. They're still, they've won the past couple weeks, but not against any great shakes in terms of the 49ers and the Buccaneers. Jags, Titans, those are teams where we don't know what we're going to get from week to week. Jaguars could be quitting on their coach at that point. The Titans could be, you know, beat up with injuries. It's hardly out of the question that they could swing together three or four wins out of that stretch and win the division. The tough part for me in thinking about Colt McCoy, it's not that I think Colt McCoy is not a decent quarterback. I think he's exactly in that range that QBR suggests and that you mentioned earlier, that sort of, you know, tier four, would it be fair to say, in terms of your quarterback
tiers?
Yeah,
you'd put him somewhere in the upper half of the fourth tier, you know?
Right. So in that fourth tier, he reminds me a little bit of Case Keenum. You know, you have a guy coming out of Texas, the state of Texas, I should say. You know, not the strongest arm, but great competitor, more mobile than you might think. You know, smart guy, familiar with the scheme. The possibility, you think, okay, well, Case Keenum was great with the Vikings last year in the, you know, ideal scenario. Two great wideouts, very good tight end, offensive line was playing well, running game was effective. Everything kind of came together for Case Keenum to play well. You think about this Washington team. I can't say the same things. They have three, they're missing three of their starting offensive linemen, including two Pro Bowlers. They're going to get Trent Williams back, but I mean, he's not going to be 100% when he does come back. Morgan Moses, right tackle, is injured and not playing at a high level. So that's four offensive linemen who are compromised in one way or another. They're starting guys off the street on the interior of their offensive line. They are, Adrian Peterson's not 100%. They're down Chris Thompson. They're down Jamison Crowder. They're down Paul Richardson, their big ticket free agent this year. Josh Doctson has been disappointing. Jordan Reed is playing through, he's playing through pain. He's actually been pretty effective the last 2 weeks. Well, he's been pretty effective, I should say. Easy for me to say the last 2 weeks, but has not been 100%. And of course, there's always a risk to get injured again. I mean, this is not that scenario. Colt McCoy is going to have to shoulder, much more of the load than I think you want for a quarterback in that tier to have to shoulder.
I sort of agree with you that you would love to. I think they're going to try to rally around Colt McCoy, but mm-hmm. is there enough left to rally around him? And I'm with you. I just feel like they were probably a 6-4 team that easily could have been 4-6, you know, and not be any different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they haven't been terrible in any one area. I mean, that's right. Not even some of our top teams in the league can say that, you know. I mean, they've been sort of average. So that's remarkable somewhat. If Colt McCoy can be mediocre, which is mm-hmm. sort of what their offense has been, mm-hmm. maybe there's not much of a drop-off. But, okay, then best case scenario is you get to 9-7 and you're in the playoffs. I think every team wants to play you.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. I think that's a dream matchup for the, you know, possibly the 5 seed in the NFC. If you're the Panthers and you have the 5th seed and you're going to play Washington, I think you're thrilled about that relative to, you know, playing the 3rd seed, which is probably going to be the Bears.
But if you're, you know, if you're Jay Gruden, though, you're putting that on your resume also. You're saying, sure. Hey, look, man, one of my sweetest years in coaching was going to the playoffs, you know, terrible injury on the anniversary of Theismann, the same type of injury. And we got it done with Colt McCoy. I mean, it would be great.
Yeah. And I mean, you're probably keeping your job. Yeah. If you're Jay Gruden. And I do think that he gets fired if they don't make the playoffs this year. So, I think that he would be in great shape to keep his job for 2019 if they do make the postseason with Colt McCoy at quarterback. All right, Mike, let's get to the rest of the NFC East in a moment, but let's talk about our partners at SeatGeek. You know I love SeatGeek, and if you're a fan of a team that suddenly finds themselves in the playoff race unexpectedly, if you're a Texans fan, perhaps you're a Bears fan who watched that Sunday night game and thought it'd be really cool to head to Soldier Field for a critical game over the remainder of the season, or you're someone who wants to check out a hockey game, I'm going to the Golden Knights game later on in this month. I'm really excited for that. Have not been there before. No matter what you want to go see, sports, concerts, fighting. To be clear, professional fighting, not just people fighting in the middle of the street. Maybe they have World Star tickets. I don't know. They have pretty much everything I can imagine at SeatGeek. So if you want to get tickets to an event, I'd recommend going to the SeatGeek app, going to SeatGeek.com, using their deal score technology so you know you're getting a good deal on the tickets you do purchase. I use the app on my phone. It is the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. If I'm just walking by a stadium, arena, there's something going on, go on my phone. There's a cheap ticket. I might go. I got a very chill life. I'm not going to lie. I'm very lucky. I go to a lot of sports. I use SeatGeek to get in just about every single time. And best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering promo code Barnwell today. So go to the SeatGeek app. If it's your first purchase, enter in promo code Barnwell. You get $10 back off your first SeatGeek purchase. Check it out. SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets. In terms of the Cowboys, I mean, are you believing this team? I mean, this is a squad that after week 9, after that Monday Night Football game where they really didn't show up against the Titans, lost 28-14, looked, you know, pretty much dead, in terms of their playoff contention. They've now beaten the Eagles. They've beaten the Falcons by a combined 10 points on the road, 2 road victories. Now a 3-game homestand, that Washington game on Thanksgiving, and then gets a little tougher. The Saints the following Thursday, on Thursday Night Football, and then the Eagles in what could be basically a deciding game to figure out which of these two teams is going to compete with Washington to win the division, perhaps after the mini bye on December 9th in week 14. I mean, what are your expectations for the Cowboys out of this homestand?
Well, I think overall they're about what they should be, 5-5. I think they're probably on their way to an 8-8 type season. You know, mm-hmm. I think they win the Redskin game, lose the New Orleans game, and come down to the wire with probably a good chance to win the Eagle game, just based on the way things are going for Philly right now. So, you know, they get two out of three, you probably go on the road to the Colts and have a hard time winning that game. I think Andrew Luck outscores. You come home, beat the Giants, or beat the Buccaneers. And, you know, who knows in the last game? I think they probably beat the Giants, but there's a couple in there that can go either way. So I think they're just a model of mediocrity where they're about, and in fact, if you look at our efficiency metrics on them, they're right at like 50 on offense, 50 on defense, 50 on special teams. There's nothing great or bad about them. And it just sort of is what they are. There's nothing really deceptive about them. There's nothing, they're just a 500 team to me.
Now, in terms of the Eagles, they're 4-6, they're two games back. Are they interesting to you? Because maybe you figure they have the highest ceiling, given, you know, that they are a defending Super Bowl team, or is it just you think the injuries have beaten them up so much that they are just not the same, you know, they're just not the same roster. They're only the same roster in uniform and in name as opposed to the actual level of play we saw from a year ago.
I'm kind of concerned that Jason Kelsey was right in his little analysis of the team. You know, there's no stats for what's the makeup of the locker room and group of guys. I do believe every year's different, but I think there was kind of an expectation or a hope that, you know, that hey, now you're going to have Carson Wentz for at the end of the year, and, you know, maybe you can be a contender again. But there was also a fear, exactly what Kelsey was talking about. You know, you're bringing in some of these guys from the outside who, you know, do they fit the fabric of what you're doing? How is that affecting the makeup of your team? You have some injuries. It is a different year. People's get you a target on your back. All those things that we can't really quantify feel to me like they're just taking a toll on Philadelphia. And so, you know, you can look at their schedule and you could see a way that they could win almost all the games, except for they have a game at the Rams in Week 15 that you're not going to probably think they're going to win. But all the other games, you could see they could win. Yet, do I feel like, I mean, after what happened to them in the Saint game, to me, that just doesn't happen to you if you're a good team, if you're going to be a good team. You don't lose by 41. I mean, can we name, I mean, maybe you go back to that Patriot team that lost, you know, early in the Lawyer Malloy game, but I think that's just a really bad sign. You know, one of the things I kind of track is, what percent of your games were you, did you win or lose by no more than one score? It's just a little bit of a barometer to me. And in recent years, you know, New England and Seattle have been amazing in that. You know, they've gone long stretches where that just doesn't happen to them. That happened to them. That happened to that Philly team, and I don't feel great about it.
So I looked it up while you were talking. There have been two teams in the history or in the modern history of the National Football League who have lost by 40 points in a game and made it to the Super Bowl. The 2008 Cardinals, who lost by 40 points to the Patriots, and the 1970 Dallas Cowboys. So it's been a while since that 2008 Cardinals team. And granted, we're not asking, you know, we're not asking the Eagles to make the Super Bowl. We're not expecting them to make the Super Bowl. But even if you go to, you know, playoff teams, I mean, it's only happened 19 times. It happened with the 2017 Titans, who I believe they lose to by 40 points. The Texans, they lost when probably the peak Deshaun Watson game to the Texans. And then before that, 2010 Jets, 2008 Cardinals, 2007 Washington, 2006 Jets. I mean, it's not, you don't see it happen very frequently. Teams who are, you know, who are good are at least going to make it competitive. They at least have enough on offense to, at the end of a game, you know, to get back in the contest and make it look more presentable against a team that really doesn't have to try that hard, just have to really kill clock. And the Eagles couldn't do that in this game. They left Carson Wentz in, I mean, against the Saints. That honestly kind of shocked me. I thought they would take him out, but I don't know if it was Doug Peterson trying to show that his team needed to, you know, prove that they were going to continue to put an effort in. But I mean, this was a game where, you know, it felt like the Eagles had to show up. They didn't have to win, but they at least had to show up. And this was they sleptwalked through this game. They have nothing in the secondary. They're down to the third string players in the secondary, but this offense was not playing a great defense. This is a defense that we talked about it earlier. They're getting better, but they're not a great defense still by any means. And they did nothing in offense in this game. They were a mess. I don't know what to attribute that to, but I don't think it doesn't bode well for what they're going to do, even against more mediocre defenses over the final 6 weeks of the year.
Yep. And there's only been 37 teams that have lost. It's only happened since 2001, there's been 37 games where someone lost by 40. So it's a small set of teams. By the way, in those games, they had 11 touchdown passes and 87 picks. These are really bad games, but it's happened twice this year, and the other team was the Bills. You know, I don't know. There's something's wrong there, you know, in that equation. I'm with you. I was really watching the psychology of, like, you know, how long they leave guys. And the analysts on TV were like, and the Saints could have scored way more points. And I was like, oh, I thought they were being pretty aggressive as it was. I mean, they were throwing the ball down the field when the game's totally out of hand and they easily could have just been handing off. And it felt like if I'm the Eagles, I felt like part of, like, your competitive nature made you not want to, if you take out Wentz, then you're like, you really are standing over there with the white flag. And the other team is still charging. And it felt to me like that would have been hard to do. Like, you would have had to be the bigger person. You know, I don't know what I would have been.
That's a great way to put it. I definitely see what you're saying. I just imagine if Carson Wentz got hurt in this game. I mean, in the fourth quarter, that would have been a season-ending thing. And I think the Eagles, I mean, even if they played terribly in this game, and they did, you know, you don't have to be great to win this division. You just have to be the last team standing in a mess of a division. I don't know that they're going to be the team standing, but if you had to pick a team, as you're up here, to win the NFC East, given that Washington's down their backup quarterback, the Cowboys are, like you said, the picture of average to below average, the Eagles are a mess in a lot of ways on both sides of the ball, who do you favor? Who would you lean towards if you had to pick a team to win the NFC East?
Well, I would go with Dallas right now. I mean, I think they're the team I would trust the most to at least be mediocre, and they've got a little bit of a head start in the division, but you don't feel great about it at all. I'm just looking our FPI has the Cowboys at 51% to win the division. That feels a little high over the field. It actually has the Redskins at 37 and the Eagles at 12 percent. So I would say the Eagles are higher than 12%. They feel better than that to me, a better chance than that. It's not like they're one game behind, you know, they're one game behind Dallas, but I would lean towards Dallas to win the division.
Yeah. I mean, it seems strange. Just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how Jason Garrett was about to get fired, and now he seems like the favorite to win the division. And if he wins the division, well, he's probably going to keep his job for another year. It's a funny game, the NFL. It's funny how things change so quickly. Well, Mr. Sando.
Yeah, and you just try not to overread into 1 week. That's the hard part of this, you know, is like we have to write columns every week. We can't just wait till the end of the year and then write what we think out, you know. But sometimes you just have to say, I'm not, you know, you're almost better for not watching a 2 week stretch sometimes.
I mean, you're certainly better for being patient and not sort of just reacting to what you saw most recently. And sometimes you're going to lose because you're not going to catch that sort of trend happening. And you're going to say, well, I'm going to look at the bigger picture. And sometimes the trend is real. And a team that, you know, suddenly figures things out does improve dramatically over the course of a week or two. But I think you're going to get fooled more often than not by sort of reacting to that thing immediately and not having the sort of broader view of what's happened over an entire season or a couple seasons. When you have teams like the Cowboys, for example, where we know what they are, we've seen what they've been over the past, you know, three or four seasons with Jason Garrett and this core of players on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and that's why when you're asking about, you know, the Patriots, you have to take into account the past. If they had the exact same set of circumstances and it was the Lions, I'd be way more skeptical, you know. Mm-hmm. But they just have a way of improving. So, you know, I don't think that Philly necessarily has that established. They've had one great season under a first year coach, you know, but do you feel like we know exactly what they're going to be for the Peterson era? I don't know. You know, I think he'll need to update the book.
Yeah, it's certainly still like we're still sort of figuring out what they are. Now, the Lions I do believe in because they've practiced outdoors. Now they're a tough team. They're going to streak. They're going to just sweep the table the rest of the way. I'm not concerned about the Lions, but we'll talk about that in the weeks to come. Mr. Sando, again, it's always a pleasure. You're writing stuff for ESPN all the time. Where can people check that out?
Absolutely. Well, the E-plus section of the ESPN app is awesome. I mean, I watch a ton of stuff in there, the Peyton Manning breakdowns every week. So sign up for that stuff, and then you get to read my stuff too. I wouldn't ask anybody to just do it just for me. But if you want to see kind of what I'm up to. Also, Sando ESPN on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd absolutely recommend you signing up strictly for Mike's stuff, but you'll get other things as well. Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure. We'll have you back on later on in the year, but thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much to Mike Sando for hopping on the show today. Like I said, always a pleasure. Always an easy show when Mike is on. Always learn a lot. I'm going to tell you guys something as well. There's not going to be a show on Thursday. It's a little holiday called Thanksgiving. If you are outside of America, if you celebrated Canadian Thanksgiving, well, pretend that we took Canadian Thanksgiving off as well. But as an American, I'm going to take off Thanksgiving. I'll be watching the games. We'll come back to you next Monday. We'll be talking about week 12 of the season. We'll probably get to some of those Thanksgiving games as well. May have a column later in the week, depending on what is happening. Last couple of years ago, I went to a Celtic Ajax Champions League match and then rushed home to write about Chip Kelly and the Eagles mess, and what's worked out well for the Eagles ever since. But hopefully a fun Thursday night, a fun Thursday of games, and then a fun slate on Sunday. So enjoy Chiefs Rams tonight, and thanks so much for listening.